there, Green Future Growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Do you want to improve your soil fertility? Would you like to learn more about cover crops? Does growing your own fertilizer sound good to you? Have you been hearing about green manure but aren't sure where to start? If you'd like to join me in a study group where we go through Anna Hesse's amazing primer, Homegrown Humus, Cover Crops in a No-Till Garden, then join our study group this fall. The cost for the beta version would just be $10 and includes a copy of the book along with free shipping. So I've got some tentative dates, No I Love Lesson Plans. So reach out to me on the Organic Gardener Podcast Homegrown Humus Study Group page, or you know, you can email me at orgpodcast@gmail.com or just go to the contact page. But if you would like to learn more and sign up for the beta group, let me know. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today, and I'm super excited to introduce another podcaster, and you might be interested in listening to her podcast. And then she also has a great blog, and she's just somebody that I think we're going to be excited to learn from today. So I'll let her tell you about herself. So her podcast is called The Beginner's Gardener Podcast, The Beginner's Garden Podcast. And her name is Jill. Well, her blog is called Journey with Jill. So welcome to the show today, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to learn about your gardening journey and your podcast. I always encourage people to listen to other people's podcasts because, you know, you don't want to just watch one channel on TV. And the more of us out there, you know, the guy who runs my podcasting group always talks about living in a world of abundance and not scarcity. So, you know, I just like to encourage people to check out all sorts of different voices. So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey?
Yes, my name is Jill McSheehy, and I live in Arkansas, and I'm currently a stay-at-home mom to two children. My son, Drew, is 10. My daughter, Alyssa, is 6. And after I graduated from college, I was in the workforce, and I was a manager of a Ford dealership, a local Ford dealership, for about 10 years. And when my daughter was 2 years old, I just felt like I needed to be home. So when I transitioned to being a stay-at-home mom, I started gardening primarily to save money on the grocery bill, since we were going from two incomes to one. That was my primary reason for starting a garden.
Well, I think that's awesome because, you know, I've been thinking a lot about how I fit into this because I am actually, my husband's really the gardener and I'm usually too busy to garden. Time's always a big factor and just, you know, it's just, I'm more of the eater in the garden. And like, so just yesterday I went to the grocery store and I came home. I was like, I couldn't buy anything. I bought broccoli heads and that's it. I was like, I couldn't afford to buy any fruit. I couldn't afford to buy any vegetables really. Like, and then I've been trying to buy more organic fruits, like organic strawberries, because every time I bring home a thing of strawberries, Mike's like, "Ooh, look at those pesticides you're eating." And I'm like, I know, but who can afford them? So then I didn't buy any strawberries yesterday and I didn't buy any fruit. And so I think money is a huge piece in this and a big factor. And so I'm excited to hear about your journey. And I'm sure listeners are too, because I'm sure that's a big part of we want healthy food that's affordable. So, and yes, kudos to you for staying home with your daughter, because that's so important. As a teacher, you know, I know that, just what a big difference it can make for a parent to be home with their child. So,
yes, we've loved it.
And then, I just had to tell you. So Arkansas is one of my favorite states. I have driven through all but two states, which I think are Alabama and Louisiana. And so I was coming home from, I did a little stint down in New Mexico, and I was coming home and it was in the fall. It was right after Halloween. And I was driving through the South. I get stuck in this big snowstorm in Texas. And then I get to Arkansas and I just go through the northern tip of Arkansas, but it was so beautiful. I'll never forget it. I can still picture like going around the curves in the roads, and it was just gorgeous. So I'm excited. And I don't know if I've had someone from Arkansas. I'm so embarrassed. I used to know every single guest and like where they were from and stuff. And I had like a little map, but if you're not the first person from Arkansas, you're definitely one of them. So, but
yes, Jill, it is a beautiful state for sure.
It is. I do always like to start the show asking about your very first gardening experience. You know, like who were you with? Were you an adult? Were you a kid? Like, what'd you grow? What do you remember?
Yes, my gardening experience is surprising to most people because now I'm, headlong into gardening, but I did not start out that way. My mom gardened throughout my life, but I wanted nothing to do with it. She would joke about how she would be cooking dinner and she would ask me to go pick a pepper from the garden, and I would ask her what that was. So I had no idea growing up. And so when I was, 30, 31 years old, a few years ago, when I decided to grow a garden, she could not help but roll her eyes and wonder how long this was going to last. So I do not have much experience in the garden at all, but I was determined. And we actually, I'm going to back up a little bit. We actually started out, my husband wanted to grow a couple of things. So while I was still working full time, he built two raised beds and we put some fruit and vegetables in those raised beds. And I kind of started getting the itch then, but not like for a major, in a major way, just because I was working 40 to 50 hours a week at the time and I didn't have time to do it. But when I knew I was getting ready to be a stay-at-home mom, I just dove headlong into this venture. And that was in the fall. And I created this place that I was going to create my huge garden in one particular part of the yard. And at the time, I was really like studying the Back to Eden garden method because I didn't know anything else. A friend of mine had told me about it. So I was covering that whole plot with newspapers and wood chips and everything that whole the fall before I started my garden. And then also that whole winter, I spent that whole winter researching. I was reading books and blog posts and everything I can get my hands on. I almost felt like I kind of compare it to being a college student. You learn all of this stuff, you have all this head knowledge, but then when it comes time to it, you have no life experience. So when spring came, I had all this head knowledge, but no experience. I had no idea what pests or what diseases I might battle or what even my soil would be like. So it was very much a rookie year, and it started out where the whole area where my garden was that I had spent hours putting newspaper and wood chips on was pretty much flooded. So the reason is because we have a very wet spring, and I had never paid attention to that part of my garden before. And I realized this was not going to work. So in the middle of spring, we up and created a whole new garden on the other side of our property where it was a little bit more elevated and didn't flood. So that was a hard experience having to redo everything, but that garden ended up being very successful. It was like a 2,500 square foot garden. So
Wow.
people tell you to start small, and I totally did not start small, but it worked out really well, and I was hooked. I had to keep doing it every year. I loved it.
I love so much of that. And you are gonna, I know you're gonna be dropping golden seeds. That's what I kind of call like my golden nuggets or like value bombs and stuffs for listeners, because I always say newer gardeners have a lot of lessons like fresh in their head, whereas older gardeners have a lot of value and different things to add, but they forget some of those beginning steps that we all make. And I know exactly how that feels to like be like, oh, this is my big plan, and then I haven't paid attention, and something doesn't work, either the slope or the, just like you said, you got flooded in. So, and then the other funny thing is like, so my mom probably rolls her eyes every day when she's like, I can't believe my daughter has a gardening podcast, because she couldn't get me to garden either when I was a kid. Like, I didn't want to be out in the hot. I still don't really like getting dirty. Gardening's just kind of like, I like to eat the things in the garden, but I'm the same way. When my mom goes and picks herbs for a salad when I'm there, I'm always like, how do you know what to pick and what is what? And like, she'll try to get me to go out there and do it. I'm like, no, you have to come still. So,
Yes.
but funny, well, awesome. So now then, how did you learn how to garden organically from all that research you did over the summer? I mean, over the
Yes,
winter?
a lot of it was the research in that first year. And to be honest, I didn't set out to try to garden in an organic matter in an organic manner. My mom actually, my first year, gave me seven dust when I had trouble with Colorado potato beetles, and I just sprinkled it on there. I sprinkled it everywhere because mom said that's what I needed to do. And but the more I learned throughout the years. Actually, I think that was the only year I ended up using that, because the more I learned, the more I realized I want to eliminate pesticides. I want to eliminate synthetic fertilizers. I started really researching compost. And I have in the past, this will be my fifth year, I have noticed that the amount of bad bugs, so to speak, have really kind of gone down over the years. And I think a lot of it is because I try to use methods that encourage a healthy ecosystem where I have beneficial insects in my garden. I have birds and toads, and I'm sure there are snakes, although I try to make my presence known so I don't see any. But I try to make such an environment where the good bugs will thrive. And so far, it's worked pretty well. And for me, I just don't have to use most of those pesticides anymore. Now, I do have some issues with some specific bugs, but I learn how to work around it without having to use a whole lot of invasive methods, even organic ones.
All right. Well, I know people are going to start following your blog after hearing this and listening to your podcast to find out what some of those solutions are, the ones that you already have learned and the ones that you have yet to meet. And it's good to hear, because I know, like, I've had a lot of guests talk about we're lucky in Montana because we have such a cold frost and things in the winter that will kill off a lot of bugs. And I think, you know, a lot of Mike's success has been, you know, we encourage those beneficials like you. And so I call my listeners green future growers, because they're growing us a green future, and you are definitely growing us a greener future. This is awesome. I love your story and how you're building a, you know, just like an entire environment. You're not just thinking about, oh, I'm just going to grow some cabbages or something, like you're doing your whole environment. So I think you're going to inspire a lot of listeners today.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, so do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year?
Yes. There's actually one example that I still can't wrap my mind completely around it. We ended up building a few more raised beds within our garden. And now I think the garden's over 3,000 square feet. We keep adding to it, but I think we're done for a while. But I went ahead and we added a few raised beds. And in one of the raised beds, we ended up using native soil from another part of the property. And our soil is extremely acidic, and it has a lot of clay content. But we ended up using the native soil just to save money and not have to buy other soil. But what I did, I knew that raised bed would be used for tomatoes. And what I did in January, we have chickens. At the time, we only had 6, and now we have 15. But what I did is I took all the chicken manure and pine shavings that they had been in for the winter, and I put it on that raised bed in January. And most people know or have heard that fresh chicken manure is not good to put on fresh plants because it could burn them. But if it gets a chance to break down a little bit, it will add to the fertility. So I added that in January, and I just let that break down naturally. And I have read that that could also be a problem because all those nutrients might leach out. But I was just going to test it just to see. So I did that in January. And then in our area, I can plant my tomatoes out in the beginning of April. So in the beginning of April, I added a fresh layer of compost on top of that. And that was compost that I made, my own homemade compost. And I planted my tomatoes in there. And these are Roma tomatoes. I started all of my tomatoes from seed this year. Super excited about that. A lot of them I had saved from last year too. So that's even more fun. I feel like that's free tomatoes. But anyway, I have been so incredibly amazed at the Roma tomato plants. They are larger than any Roma tomatoes I have grown throughout my gardening seasons. They were so large. They were like bringing down the stakes in the high winds.
Wow.
And there's tomatoes everywhere. And I just can't help but think, because I use that native soil that typically isn't the best quality, I can't help but think a lot of that is due to being able to use the homemade compost and the timing of when I put the chicken manure and pine shavings on top of the raised bed. So that was a garden success for me this year.
Awesome. Well, I think listeners are really going to like that. And the only thing my concern would be about putting fresh chicken manure, and like, I don't know how it works. I just know that there's something about the manure has to sit for 120 days before you can sell it at food at a farmer's market. So
yeah, I did it at the beginning of January.
But yeah, I think you're way past your 120 days at this point anyway.
Yeah, I began it in January and then I didn't plant
Before,
them until April. So that was 3 months from transplant. So they're just now coming ripe. So that's been at least, what, 6 months probably.
So you should be plenty good there. So, but yeah, Mike has always talked about the best garden he ever grew was like down in Colorado 1 year. And there had been a chicken house where he put the garden bed, and he always raves about that garden. And then
Yes.
he always uses chicken manure, whether he makes like compost tea out of it, or he like, he usually lets it sit for a little bit, or I don't know. I don't really know how everything he does, how he does it, but yeah, chicken manure is super. And then homemade compost is great too.
Yes.
I like, see, now that's one of the jobs I like in the garden. I've always liked, like, because I grew up, my mom always had a, like a milk carton full of compost, on the, and I just remember her always going and dumping it every day. And just like, that always seemed like the easy job. Like, and I've always had compost. Like, even I remember when I first went to college in Brooklyn and my roommate's looking at me like, you want to do what? You want to keep what? Where? And just, and even like at school this year, I kept compost in our classroom or I would take it home.
Oh.
So the one thing I struggled with this year was the worm bin, but I think the biggest thing to my worm bin problem was I tried to keep a lid on it and you can't, I think they need more
Oh.
air. So I'm excited to try that again next year. So
Yeah.
how about, is there something you're excited to try next year that you haven't done before? Something new or different?
Well, when I think about next season, I can't think of a whole lot I'll do differently next growing season, like in the spring and summer, because this year was a year where I did a lot of simplifying. Because last year I grew a lot of test crops, and I'm all about trying new things, but I tried a lot of new things and I ended up wasting a lot of space, I think. So I really simplified this year, growing mainly what we eat and trying a few new things. So a lot of that has worked really well, and I think I'm going to continue that. But one thing I am going to try differently this year is I really want to do more for my fall garden, because in my area, we don't get our first frost till November typically. So we
Wow.
have a long growing season. And in the past, I've kind of haphazardly planted some fall crops, but nothing real specific or intentional. I did get a really good harvest of red carrots last year in November, which were amazing. But other than that, I haven't really taken advantage of our longer season in that way. So I'm going to be trying my hand at starting seeds indoors in the middle of January, because in Arkansas, it gets really hot in July and August, heat indices in the hundreds. So you can't plant your cool weather, even your cool weather seeds out in that heat. So I'm going to be trying those indoors and just hoping for a better fall garden than I've had in the past. So that's something new I'm going to start trying.
Okay, but I'm confused. Start them indoors in January
Oh,
for
did I say
fall garden?
January? I'm sorry, I meant July.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sorry. Yes,
No, that's fine.
no, I'll start the seeds indoors in July, and that way, or August, and that way they have a chance to kind of miss that really hot weather that we have in July and August, and then I can get them in the garden in September and maybe October, and that way the heat has already passed, and it would be a prime time for some of those cooler weather crops to grow.
Isn't that so funny that that's such a struggle? Mike and I have really been working on that the last few years. Ever since I talked to Lisa Ziegler, she's like a flower farmer in Virginia. And just like basically since I started my podcast, a lot of people have talked about fall gardens and we've just been kind of working on implementing it slowly. But the hardest part is sinking in. If you're going to put something in the ground in September or October, you need to start the seeds inside in June or July. Like for us, it would probably be more. We should probably be starting them right now. June, here we are. It's June 29th today. July 1st is going to be on Saturday. And so we should probably have, like, if we're going to put broccolis in for a fall crop of broccoli, we should be doing it now. And it just seems like such a weird time to be starting seeds.
It
We're just
does.
barely putting in. Mike just planted green beans this morning. And just, I still have tomatoes in, containers that need to go in the dirt. And so it's hard to imagine talking about the fall garden. But Mike keeps mocking my spring break. I mean, my summer vacation anyway. He's like, yeah, your time is gone and you've had like what, one day off? I think I've had, well, I went to a training last week. So I feel like my official break didn't start till Saturday.
Oh.
Anyway, well, that's awesome. You have been just dropping lots of great golden seeds. So I think listeners will like, because like even though people tell you over and over, count backwards and start backwards, it just still seems awkward. So I'm glad that you're going to try that. And then simplify is always a big one. I think a lot of gardeners, we get excited in the spring and we do too much. And then,
Yes.
and you know who you would really like is Megan Kane. She talks a lot about strategic gardening and planning what you're actually going to eat. And, you know, experimenting is good and mixing things in, but like, you know, because there is a lot of work that goes into gardening, you know, just really being strategic. So,
Yes.
tell us about something that maybe didn't go the way you thought it was gonna this season, something that maybe didn't turn out right. Or you did tell us about that one episode when you first started, but how about something that didn't work out quite right this season?
Oh, wow. Where do I start? This has been a challenging season this year. It's finally starting to look up, but for a while there, I was a little nervous. We had two major issues this spring, and the first one was just the heavy rain in the spring. We tend to like get a lot of rain and then like it stops and then we get drought. But we had so much heavy rain that my bean seeds would not germinate because that area was underwater so much of the time. So I had to replant my pole beans probably 3 or 4 times, perhaps. And part of that wasn't just the rain, but the second issue we dealt with this year, and that was rabbits. But let me tell you why we had problems with rabbits where we haven't had before. When I first started gardening, my rabbits were eating everything. And so my husband did some research and he put up an electric fence, and we had like 3 or 4 lines of electric fence, and it worked beautifully. That's why when I went out to my garden this year and all my peas were gone, I frankly thought it was a cutworm because I had found a cutworm on another plant. But then next thing I know, my beans are gone, and my son was out in the garden and he noticed a rabbit inside the garden, inside the electric fence. And
Oh,
so we watched to see like how he got out. And this little ninja rabbit decided that he was going to jump through the electric fence. And as long as, okay, I guess electricity 101, I didn't know this, but I guess if you're not grounded, you don't get shocked. So he's jumping through the electric fence, touching all the wires, but since he's not touching the ground, he doesn't get shocked. And so they figured out an easy way into our garden. So my husband and I just decided to put up a temporary chicken wire barrier around our pole beans just until they could at least start climbing, and then there wouldn't be such an issue. But I lost my entire pea crop to rabbits this year. I was so devastated. And I also had a really, really late start on my beans because of that. So that was very, very discouraging this season.
Well, you know, I was just talking to my son-in-law, my grandson, yesterday, and we were talking about the biggest hazard we have here are animals. They had rabbits too, the same problem. And Mike actually got a deer in his garden this spring in his little mini farm somehow. Like, I guess he left like a gate open, or they like managed to like, he thought it was shut, but they like pried their way in. I'm not really even sure what exactly happened. All I know is the deer got in the mini farm, and I think it's a miracle that there's still as much growing as there is for the damage they could have done, 3 deer in the garden. But so what I'm curious about is like, what are you going to do next year?
Well, we have a plan for that. We actually, on one side of the garden, we moved our chicken coop, one of our chicken coops inside the garden, and my husband constructed chicken tunnels for the perimeter of that one side. And we are probably going to expand the chicken tunnels and make that kind of the barrier there. And then the areas that we don't do the chicken tunnels, I think we're just going to take the chicken wire and make the chicken wire be the lower barrier that keeps the rabbits out. And then we'll keep the electric fence the higher part to keep the deer out. So hopefully that will take care of it once and for all.
Nice. Do you want to tell listeners what chicken tunnels are? I just vaguely have seen like a video or two. I'm not even really sure, but you know, kind of have an idea. But do you want to tell listeners what chicken tunnels are? That's a great idea. Plus, you're fertilizing the edge of your garden, so then if you expand out there, you're getting all those
Yes.
nutrients.
Yes, and I can't tell you how to build them because my husband built them, but they're basically little wire arch-shaped tunnels, I guess, that you it's open on the bottom and they just can go all around the perimeter of the garden, wherever you put the tunnels at. And for us, it's not only just the fertility, because obviously, like you said, it does create a better, more fertile area if you do expand, but they keep the perimeters of our garden weeded, you know, by their scratching. And also they're always getting bugs. So they're taking care of a lot of the ground bugs around the garden as well.
Yeah. Oh, and then what was I going to say? That was just, oh, well, and then it's like making your chickens free range. It's giving them places, because that's kind of been like a big challenge with Mike and I. Like, our chickens had a really big pen, but still, mm-hmm. to me, it was always a pen. So I finally talk him into letting them out into the woods, because lots of people in our area let their chickens just roam all over into the woods. And he was always like, well, what's going to keep them out of the garden? And I was like, well, you know, they've got that whole area back there. Let them out into the forest behind the garden. And that worked for the first year, but now the chickens have free reign, and I think he wants to kill me over it, or I don't know. He keeps talking about flipping their wings, but we only have one chicken, one rooster, and one duck right now, so they're being pretty mellow. But yeah, we're having like it's because he built this huge deer fence. We have like, there's 260 feet of fence off of each end of the house, so it's a big space, so it keeps the deer out now. And then we used to just have these little beds with like chicken wire, kind of like, I call them like teepees or like tents over them, and now he's back to having to put those chicken wire tents to keep our one chicken and one duck and one rooster out.
Yes. But,
yeah, animals are tough.
Yeah, we don't let our chickens in the garden for that reason. However, we are going to let them in there once the season is over. And that way they'll be able to fertilize the garden over the winter time, and they can peck away at whatever insect they find in the ground. And maybe that will help out with the grub problem or any cutworms or anything like that. So we plan on doing that during the winter time.
Nice. I think people's heads are probably just spinning with all the great things that you're talking about and ideas. So chicken tunnels, that's excellent. And just even if you started with like a small one or two, like I think people will like that.
Yeah.
Before we get to the root of things, we're going to thank our sponsors and affiliate links. Have you ever wanted to learn how to create a small market garden that can feed 200 families and create a generous income? Have you ever wanted to learn how to do manual labor that's pleasant, lucrative, and very much in keeping with a healthy lifestyle? Would you like to learn how to improve the quality of your soil while maximizing your crop yields? Well, Jean-Martin Fortier discusses biological intensive farming in his amazing book, The Market Gardener, which you can get from Amazon.com. If you just go to the Organic Gardener podcast website and click on recommended books, his book was recommended by Joyce Pinson from Friends Drift In way back when I first started. And Mike and I have both read it. It's got great advice in there, things that will help you, whether you're a market farmer or a backyard gardener, be more effective, more efficient, and learn how to love gardening as much as you love enjoying the yummy produce that comes from there. So go to organicgardenerpodcast.com and to the recommended books page right on top, and you can get a copy of his book and support the Organic Gardener podcast at the same time. Hey, green future growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book, or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com, and you can get enter to get listening to your first audiobook today. So this is kind of where I get to the part of the show that I call getting into the root of things. So what's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Like, is there something you have to force yourself to get out there and do?
That's a really good question, because I really enjoy most everything, but I would say in this Arkansas heat in the summer is cleanup after the plants are done. Pulling up corn stalks, okra, pole beans. Usually this stuff has to be done when it's oppressively hot, and that would probably be my least favorite thing to have to do.
I hear you there. So then on the flip side, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Well, besides harvest, of course, I would say mulching. And I know that may sound funny, but it's so pretty to be able to wood chip mulch my garden. I love the way it looks after I'm done. And then it also cuts my weeding time dramatically. I know I won't have to do near as much weeding when I mulch. And two, I know that over time it will be beneficial for the soil. And I found that to be the case in the areas that I've had for the last 5 years. The places that have had wood chip mulch have a much better soil tilth than the parts of my garden that I'm just starting to cultivate.
Excellent. That's so true. I was looking around Mike's garden this morning because, like, I've been talking about it, but like, I feel like I've really been paying attention in the garden this spring and exactly what he's doing and like taking a combination of what my guests have said and like just really noticing it. And for sure, like, Mike's first thing that he does is he always makes sure he gets like every single tiny, like, even if it's like smaller than your pinky piece of quack grass out of a bed before he plants anything in it. But then he puts that hay and straw in there for mulch, and he doesn't get the weeds. Like, my listeners are always talking about, I hate weeding, or lots of guests have talked about, I hate weeding and weeding's so time consuming. And I always thought it was purely because we didn't have a lot of water, so we always watered the roots. But I also see that mulching, which is another thing Megan Kane mentioned. Just like you're saying, you don't get the weeds through that mulch. And not only that, it's adding the beneficial things. And then you can get mulch, you know, you can make mulch out of so many different things. It really rejuvenates the land. So
Yes.
that's awesome to hear that you've been doing this for 5 years and you're seeing such a radical difference in your land.
I am.
So what's the best gardening advice you've ever received, Jill?
I remember the first season, and I was trying to get my hands on or ears on as many gardening podcasts as I could find. And I remember listening to Melissa K. Norris's podcast, and it's called Pioneering Today. And she suggested something so small, but I took it to heart. And she said, do a little bit every day. And that has been such a help for me, especially with the size of garden that I have that I pretty much do on my own. Just to be able to get out in the garden a little bit every day, that way nothing really gets too overwhelming. And I like to do it either in the morning or in the evening, especially, during the heat of the summer. And just to be able to be out there in the morning, I think about in the morning the birds are chirping. So it's just so nice to be able to work in the early morning, or in the evening around sunset, the cicadas are singing, and it's just such a pleasant time to be out in the garden. But just to be able to do a little bit every day makes a huge difference in not getting overwhelmed.
Oh my goodness, those are awesome golden seeds, especially for people like me who usually have a full-time job. And it seems like it's true, like one day or 2 days, or like I was just even looking yesterday, I was talking to Mike when I got home. I was like, I haven't watered my sunflower seeds in 2 days now. Are they dried out? And I was just like all worried about them because it's true. But and then I like that tip, like go first thing in the morning or go in the evening when it's cool, because being out there when it's super hot is unpleasant. And it's also not the best for your vegetables. You don't really want to be watering in that super hot heat. So,
Right.
excellent advice. And another podcast we're going to have to check out, Pioneering Today.
Yes.
How about a favorite tool? Like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
Hands down, my Rogue hoe. And I'm not sure if you've heard of them before, but I found it at a garden show. It was the Arkansas Flower and Garden Show, from the White Harvest Seed Company. That gentleman told me about it. Initially, I needed a long weeding hoe because I was having a lot of back trouble. I ended up having to have back surgery. But anyway, I
Oh
told
no,
him
I'm
I need
sorry.
something. Yeah, well, I'm good now. But at the time, I was like, I need something to help me weed where I don't have to bend down. And this Rogue hoe is sharp. And what I like about it as far as weeding is it just clips the weeds at the soil level. And that keeps you from digging up the weed seeds in the lower levels of the dirt. And it's super handy. And like I said, very sharp. So it makes quick work of the weeding that I do have to do.
Nice. Well, that's a great tip. I always like anything that makes it easier on your back, because to me, like Mike's mini farm, all the lettuce is planted in the ground. It hasn't been that bad, but to me, I like those raised beds where you can sit around the edge and harvest. So,
Yes.
anything that's good on your back, I think, will encourage people who think, "Ooh, gardening, what a chore,"
Yes.
is good for them. The White Harvest Seed Company. Okay, I'll have to check into that. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden? What's your favorite thing to cook up, or what do your kids like to eat?
Well, my kids like fresh corn on the cob. They've really taken to that since we started doing corn on the cob. But as a southerner, I cannot like not mention fried squash and fried okra. That is our absolute favorite thing to cook from the garden.
How do you cook fried squash? Like just frying zucchini, like in a pan, or?
Well, I'm not sure how people do it in other parts of the country, but where I'm from, we will, and it's very unhealthy, so I'm just telling you that up front. But I'll slice up the squash and then I'll toss it with some vegetable oil and cornmeal and salt and pepper, and then you fry it in about a half inch of vegetable oil or whatever oil you want to use. And then right after they come out, like after they're browned on both sides, then you sprinkle some salt on them. So that way the salt kind of bakes in as it's cooling and it's delicious. So.
So, I've been meaning to ask you, like, if you're growing 3,000 square feet of vegetables, what are you doing with all this produce? Like, is it just for your family, or are you thinking about selling it in the future?
Well, it's mainly for our family because we do eat it fresh, and then I do a lot of preserving and canning. A lot of what I have in this garden is corn because my kids are really enjoying corn on the cob. And of course, corn takes a lot of space. So I have a lot of space devoted to corn, and I do a lot of space is devoted for tomatoes because I preserve as much tomatoes as I can. So most of it we do use. Now, I do have five blueberry bushes that are producing us more blueberries than we can eat or freeze. So this weekend, actually, we're going to be taking that to a local farmers market. So that'll be our first time to try to venture in that area. But my kids are looking forward to it. And it was an easy way to get them to help pick all those blueberries because I told them they could keep the revenue from what they picked. So we'll be trying that this weekend.
Nice. Well, I'm gonna check out your blog and see how it went. What was I gonna, how about corn? Got any tips for growing corn?
Oh goodness, corn had a huge learning curve for me. And I'd done enough research to know that I needed to plant them in blocks to ensure good pollination. But my first year, I didn't know when it was ready. Like I would check an ear and I knew it wasn't ripe yet, so I left it for like a week. And you can't do that because then it'll get overripe and completely inedible. So my first year was a disaster. But my second year, I figured out when to harvest it. And they're really, I just had to do a lot of YouTube searches, but mainly it was kind of like trial and error to figure out when it was ready and to be able to prick that kernel. And then if it's milky substance coming out, then it's ready. If it's like white or if it's clear, it's not ready. And if nothing comes out, it's passed. So that was my biggest challenge, was knowing when to actually harvest the corn. But if I can get it harvested at the peak time, it's well worth it.
Nice. All right. Well, who knew? So you actually like peel like one ear of corn back? Like I thought it would have something to do with like the tassels falling off or something, but and then like when that one ear is ready, are they all ready and do you have to harvest it all at once or do you like break into each ear or how does that work?
That's a really good question, but yeah, you're right about the silk. What I do is I look for the silk to completely have dried out. And then once the silk is completely dried out, then I will take a little bit of the ear of the leaf and just kind of pull it down, and then I'll prick one of the kernels, and then that's how I'll know. And they usually come ripe within a few days of each other, but I still check each one before I pick it. I don't just
Oh,
say
you
this one's
do.
ready, they're all ready. I do because what I've found is that they're not all completely ready at the same time. So that just a few days can make a big difference in the right how quickly they ripen. So I have to catch that, or I may not get them all at the perfect stage if I don't check them all. Another thing that I noticed though is I can tell when I squeeze around the cob, if it gives just a little bit, it's ready. If it's hard and still firm, it's not ready. So it's kind of a trial and error figuring that out.
Wow, you've probably grown a lot of corn to have all this knowledge. How about, or sorry, go ahead.
Once my son figured out that he loved corn on the cob, I realized that I needed to get good at doing this because that was one vegetable I could get him to eat consistently.
Well, and also, you know, corn's such a scary thing. You know, corn syrups and everything, and there's GMO corn, and you know,
Yes.
I don't know. I've heard different things. I've heard lately, it seems like I've been hearing these weird things that like the corn that people actually eat is GMO free. But to me, it's like unless the can actually says GMO free, I wouldn't trust it. I don't know. So,
Yeah, I
to be
think that's a
growing your
gray
own corn, I
area.
think is one of the best things you could be growing.
Yes, and I agree with you. I think that's a gray area because from what I've the research that I've done, the corn that is GMO is patented. And but whether the ones that come from our cans are actually from those same crops, I don't know. But I do know if I grow my own, like the seeds that we're buying are not in general going to be GMO. So if we're buying seeds from, you know, our trusted co-op or something like that, then we're good.
Yep, that's true. So what's your favorite internet resource? Like, is there a place you like to go on the web that you found specifically? Is it just YouTube or is there a website that you really like or?
Initially, I did most of my research on Pinterest, and Pinterest had a lot of good basic beginning gardener information. But I found the more that I was on it, the more I was reading a lot of the same things, and I found that there were some areas that I just couldn't get answers from. So what I found is YouTube has been a huge resource for me. Lately, I've really enjoyed the videos from Gary Polarchik, I think is how you say his name, from The Rusted Garden. His YouTube videos are really good, and he doesn't necessarily garden organically all the time, but he's very specific about saying what he uses, and he gives organic suggestions, and you can just tell he's really knowledgeable about what he's doing, and I really like that. And then also Luke, I believe, at MI Gardener, I've been watching all of his videos, and he's got a lot of good information and has taught me stuff I've never even thought of before. Another couple of them are Callie Kim, and she gardens in California. So not everything she does will apply to me, but I've learned a lot from her. But then, and then also P. Allen Smith, he has a farm here in Arkansas. So I enjoy his videos because his climate is the same as mine. So I would say probably my biggest resource right now is YouTubers of gardeners that are doing it, and they're sharing what's successful for them.
Wow, cool. Well, those are lots of great resources, and I'll put the links to them in the show notes so listeners can check them out. And good to know about Pinterest. Lots of good beginner basic information, but then not as much. And I like the way you told us a lot of YouTube because to me, YouTube can be very, you know, you're not always sure. There's so much out there, and you can like spend a half hour before you find what you want to find. So it's nice to have some suggestions of, people that you've already vetted.
Yeah.
How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or a blog or anything that you really like?
Yes, I bought a new book this year and it absolutely blew me away, and it's called Epic Tomatoes by Craig, and I'm gonna say this wrong, but Le Huyer, maybe. It's a French, I'm sure, but anyway, I love that book. It's gorgeous. It's probably the most design. It was designed really, really well. It's very, very aesthetically appealing. But hello.
Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Okay. So, you know, Skype just sometimes will do that at 45 minutes. It seems like it's always right about the same place.
Oh, okay.
So, I heard you say, I really didn't catch much of it. So, it's Epic
Okay.
Tomatoes by Craig, and all I heard was the word aesthetically.
Oh, okay. I'll start over then.
Sure.
Yes, my favorite book this year that I've read is one called Epic Tomatoes, and it's by Craig LeHuyer. I'm probably saying that wrong, but it's a very beautiful book, lots of beautiful artwork. But what I really like about it is he goes into everything you need to know about growing tomatoes, specifically from an heirloom tomato perspective. And at the very end of the book, he has all this information, like almost like troubleshooting. So if my leaves are yellow, what could it be? Or if my leaves look like this, what could it be? If my fruit is doing this, what could it be? And so it not only gives you, like, from start to finish, how to plant your tomatoes and what tomatoes need nutritionally, but also helps you troubleshoot them and then what to do about deer. I mean, it's completely comprehensive. It's probably the best book on or it's the best resource on tomatoes I've ever found.
Awesome. Okay. I'll have to check that out. So you haven't really, well, you kind of have a business with your blog. I don't know if, like, do you want to talk about any advice for listeners on how to get started blogging, maybe, or any, like, thing? Are you going to write a book?
Well, I actually, my business kind of is writing books. I've written three, and
You have? I'm sorry.
they're actually not specifically on the garden topic. Two of them have ties to gardening, but my business is writing Bible studies and devotionals, and two of my books, Glory in the Garden and Flourish, deal with gardening related topics. Can come when you're talking about faith in the garden, I kind of tie those two. But I really would like to eventually provide some resources for beginning gardeners specifically. So that's something I'm looking into in the future.
All right. Well, are your books on Amazon? Can listeners like order one from there? Do they go to your website? Sorry, I feel.
Yes. Yeah, they are available on Amazon and also my website at journeywithjill.net. I've got one Bible study on the book of Acts, and then I have Glory in the Garden and Flourish. So those three are the ones that I've already published.
All right. Well, listeners, I always like to encourage listeners to, get one of those books, and when you like it, go to Amazon and write a review, because that makes such a difference, in an author's, in their success, and just, it's like the best way you can show appreciation. And cool. Well, I'm looking at your website right now. Those look great. I'm gonna have to check those out too.
Yeah, thank you.
So. All right, well, we're ready for my final question already. So it goes like this. If there's one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Yeah, the change that I want to see and the change that I'm working toward is just to motivate and to equip more people to garden. And this desire for me is twofold. Number one, when people grow their own food, they will be healthier, as you know. As they eat healthier, they will be healthier. There will be less dependence on mass-produced processed food, which I believe is a major contributor to the health crisis we see today. And gardening also does wonders for mental health. And since my bachelor's degree is in psychology, that in particular is really important to me. And second, as a Christian, I believe, and this is something that I found personally as I started gardening, that when we get into nature and we work in the garden, we start to see God because He created all of this beauty and this diversity and the intricate biological workings of the garden. In fact, I mentioned before, my first book, Glory in the Garden, was written from my eyes as a beginning gardener that very first season. Because when I was in the dirt and I was in the garden, I saw the Bible and I saw what we learn about God right there in my garden. And then my second book, Flourish, details how composting points to Jesus and life coming from death. That was something that was huge to me when I first started composting and I started seeing that and I was like, wow, that's amazing. So I feel like that as people garden, they have that opportunity to see God through his creation and ultimately come to know him. And then also, kind of from a planet perspective, like you mentioned, I feel like the more we see the planet as his creation, hopefully that will motivate us to take care of it. So my biggest passion is to see people get in their garden and just plant something, just to be able to get outside and grow their own food.
You are so eloquent and just really, like, so the guy who I listen to, John Lee Dumas, who actually learned from Chris Raven, Cliff Ravenscraft. So in the
Yeah.
pre-chat, we were talking about how we got started in podcasting, and John always talks about being a person of service and of value, and from just starting out. If you're going to start a business, like starting out from the point of how you can help others, and you're just such a like caring Definitely a green future grower, and just your kids are so lucky to have you at home and, taking care of not just them, but our planet at the same time. And then going out and teaching, another one of John's big things, he had this guy, Ray Higdon actually developed it. I guess it's called ILT, which is invest in yourself, learn something new, but then teach it. And you are a natural teacher, and you're just taking these lessons that you've learned and you're putting them into words. You've got books out already about what you've learned as a beginner, because you can never replace that beginner time. Like that, he calls it also the curse of knowledge. You think you know all this stuff, and so it's great to get it down while you're a beginner, and you're just really sharing, I think, so much. You've just been such a wonderful guest. I'm so glad you came on and just talking with us today. And I know people are going to be inspired to go read your blog and listen to your podcast and learn new things. And I'm just really glad. It's been a great, I love my podcast. It's been a great way to meet with you today. So,
Oh, you too. Thank you.
do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners? Not that you haven't like already dropped like a million golden seeds and have done tons to inspire them. I know some people, like, even if they don't have a tomato plant, they're going to go to the store. It's still not July 4th. There's still time to go get something and put it on your windowsill or just do something this year. So.
Yes, that's exactly it. If I think of a quote that I would like to share, it's one that I try to share with people, is just plant something. It doesn't have to be a 3,000 square foot garden. It doesn't have to be even raised beds. It could just be containers on your patio, or if you're in an urban setting, containers, by your kitchen window and herbs or whatever, but just plant something. But then I do warn people, it can get addictive because I started out with two raised beds and look where I am. So you never know where it's going to take you, but just plant something.
Awesome. All right. Well, tell everybody the name of your blog and how to connect with you and where they can learn more and where they can listen to your podcast.
Yeah, the name of my blog is journeywithjill.net, and my podcast, you can search for that, which you can find that on my blog too, but you can search for the Beginner's Garden podcast. And then you can also connect with me on Instagram at instagram.com/thebeginner'sgarden and facebook.com/journeywithjill in the garden. So and I also have a YouTube channel called Journey with Jill in the Garden as well.
Ooh, you do? Okay, cool. I'm gonna have to check that out too. Well,
Yeah.
thanks so much for sharing with us today, and have a wonderful summer.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to be able to chat with you. I love talking gardening.
Me too. Do you want to improve your soil fertility? Would you like to learn more about cover crops? Does growing your own fertilizer sound good to you? Have you been hearing about green manure but aren't sure where to start? If you'd like to join me in a study group where we go through Anna Hess's amazing primer, homegrown humus, cover crops in a no-till garden, then join our study group this fall. The cost for the beta version would just be $10 and includes a copy of the book along with free shipping. So I've got some tentative dates. Know I love lesson plans. So reach out to me on the Organic Gardener Podcast Homegrown Humus Study Group page, or you can email me at orgpodcast@gmail.com or just go to the contact page. But if you would like to learn more and sign up for the beta group, let me know. Hey, green future growers. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book, or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com, and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.